Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 56 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I'm joined by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus, Pompey the Great. I'm going to be trying to rehabilitate his memory somewhat in this episode, because I just be warned, I'm quite biased in favor of Pompey, because I just really like him. I remember reading Plutarch and various other, I can't even remember who now, literally a decade ago, and coming away with the feeling that Pompey got done dirty by Caesar. You know, this was just unfair. And Pompey, his legacy would have, if Caesar had not existed, Pompey would be the guy we remember from ancient Rome. It wouldn't be Julius Caesar. It'd be Pompey. And it seems unfair that Caesar happens to have come along and beaten him. So, his accomplishments are unbelievably large, numerous, and span the scale of the entire Mediterranean Sea and beyond. And yet, all people remember is Caesar conquering Gaul.
I said this before about someone or other, but if there wasn't that one other guy in the world who's the best, it's like, who's the second best sprinter after Usain Bolt? I don't know.
Yeah, no idea. Yeah.
I'm not into athletics, so I just don't know. You know the best, greatest guy, and everyone else is another, and also ran. And so if anyone has never even heard the name Pompey, he's famous for being Caesar's greatest antagonist, really.
And ally at points.
At different points. Yeah, I was reading something. Pompey changed sides 11 times in his career.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's something we'll get to. But he's quite, I've got a bit of a soft spot for him. But history has remembered him as also a failure on some levels. Just because, if you didn't beat Caesar, then his memory will eclipse your memory.
But I love the standard, you're a loser because you didn't beat Julius Caesar. Well, very few people did, okay?
Unfair. To earn the epithet Magnus, or the Great, even if it was ever so slightly, possibly tongue-in-cheek, still, that's quite something.
The list of his accomplishments kind of forces you to accept that cognomen as well. It's like, okay, it's one thing calling someone who just loses battle after battle the Great, ironically. But Pompey doesn't. Pompey wins some more, and then loses at the very end to Julius Caesar. And so it's just like, okay, well, he was pretty great.
One of the things he did, one of the main criticisms is that he would take credit for other people's things, which is and isn't true. Sometimes,
once, I think, is the end of the
Servile. At least twice.
Is it twice, is it?
Yeah.
Right, okay. The Crassus's defeating of Spartacus's slave revolt is the only thing I really remember. What's the other thing?
Also the pirates. Well, lots of people would be... He beat them in 3 months, did he?
Didn't he?
Well, he did. He finished the job in 3 months.
But he was given
over... It'd been going on for years.
Well, yeah, but he was given over... Well, we'll get into
the war against Mithridates was Lucullus.
Yeah, but
he'd been fighting there for 6 years. Pompey turns up 1 year later. I won it.
We're going to get into
this. Yeah.
Because I think there's a good argument that actually Pompey was taking over where people were failing.
Well, yes,
Lucullus takes 6 years and still hasn't beaten Mithridates. Pompey turns up and is like, boom, job done.
His fans can absolutely argue that.
I will play the part of their fans on this one. That's totally unfair. Honestly. Right, okay.
If I could start with a couple of sort of general quotes.
Yeah, and disparaging
then we'll get into his life. Yeah, well, they're just... Well, here's one from historian Pamela Bradley. This is just an actual textbook.
Right.
But she said, quote, "Pompey was ambitious, but did not wish to rule Rome as a dictator. His aim at all times was to be the man to whom the Senate and the Roman people turned every time there was a military or administrative crisis. He wanted to be the man of the hour, the Republic's hero, and in between these crises, he expected to be given the highest possible respect, particularly from the optimates, which is the aristocratic class, to which he believed his achievements entitled him, end quote.
So that's a great point. And this is, again, one of those aspects of Pompey as a man that I really respect. And again, I find myself having a soft spot for. He wasn't a revolutionary. He wasn't some sort of radical. No. He wasn't Absolutely. The man who wanted to be a tyrant. And that's a useful characteristic in a man who's capable of winning massive campaigns. You know, it's he had a genuine commitment to the Roman Republic, unlike someone like Julius Caesar, who didn't. You know, that to me that gives some brownie points.
Me. Yeah, I mean, he did do a lot of illegal things.
Well, yeah, but like, though. Christ, who didn't?
Yeah, but he pretended.
Marius marches on Rome, and that's like, okay, well, all better off then. So,
yeah,
for like 100 years, everyone had been doing illegal things.
Yeah, well, so two wrongs do make a right.
Well, no, it's not that. I'm not saying he's right. I'm just saying that this is the way that Rome is run now.
Yeah. If I could do a quote from Rex Warner, who is translated Plutarch and was mm-hmm. known as among the greatest philologists of the 20th century. He said this, quote, "The life of Pompey is a curious mixture. The opening remarks of Plutarch of Pompey's character are surprising, to say the least. The Pompey who emerges from the pages of Cicero is hardly tactful, easy of manner, and free from conceit. Yet Plutarch later makes several more pertinent observations. He recognises Pompey's tendency to throw his weight around, as evidenced by as referenced by his treatment of Lucullus and Metellus, their people he sort and is aware of his extreme sensitivity to criticism and his constant yearning for popular approval. He also appreciates certain aspects of Pompey's career, the extraordinary nature of Pompey's rise, the skill with which he developed his clientele in Sicily, Africa, and the East, and his brilliant capacity for organising large-scale campaigns as against the pirates, are all given due notice." End quote. So there's good and bad things. I mean, you just cannot deny that he is sort of an important figure.
Well, and did
extraordinary things. I think if you put, because quite a lot of these quotes disparage him as being of no great, the right man at the right time, but him personally of no great ability. I don't think that's true.
No, that's not
that
fair
can't
at all.
Really be true, can it?
Well, no, and it's also just not fair. Like he was clearly a very, very capable commander. I mean, for like 20 years of his life, he was Rome's premier military commander. Yeah. He was the guy. You know, if the Romans were like, oh God, there's a crisis, we need a general to sort it out, all eyes focused on Pompey, and Pompey just kind of glowed like the sun and was like, of course I can do this, watch me. And then went and stomped it in a couple of months, like where everyone else had been struggling. And he does this multiple times in his career, in Africa, in Spain, in the East, with the pirates. He does this a lot, you know.
With Spartacus.
Well, that one... Crass has had dealt with that. So, you know, that's the only one where you can really say, come on, Pompey, you didn't earn that. You know, you turned up with like 30,000 men and 6,000 broken slaves of, oh, look, I've ended the slave revolt. Shut up, you know. You've got loads of other victories. You don't need that one. You know, it would have been gentlemanly. But anyway, I think that this is a defensible position on Pompey's part. I really do.
So should we get into the chronology of his life and the events? Because as you say, and I mentioned, I think it's a bit unfair, at least in the beginning of his career, to say he's a mediocrity. Mm. Theodore Mommsen calls him a mediocrity at one point, and it just can't be the case. So one of the first things that sort of happens in his life, where he sort of springs onto the stage of history, or where the ancient sources pick up his career, he's 23 years old.
And can we start just before that? Because his dad's Pompey Strabo, who's a sullen partisan in the civil war between Marius and Sulla. Strabo apparently means cross-eyed, so it's interesting. I didn't know that until very recently. And his dad ends up dying in this civil war, and Pompey is in his service at like 19 years old. So Pompey begins with a military career and is a military man for his entire life. And so, like you say, it's totally unfair to call him a mediocrity, because even when he's young, he demonstrates a talent for this, you know, and he becomes a reliable man. And so after his father dies, he joins Sulla's side in the civil war, and he's invaluable to Sulla, winning the civil war. And so to say, oh, he's a mediocrity and he's not very important, it's like, no, Sulla was relying on him. And the Pompey has definitely got a big ego for a young man. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just really amusing how Sulla, he presses this ego against Sulla, and Sulla can't even just knock him down because he's reliant on him and the legions that he's raised. And even as a young man, he's never held in the office. He doesn't have any legitimacy, but he does have this military brilliance, which obviously was, you know, something that was useful to Sulla to win a civil war. And much of Pompey's, like, you know, young life is, like, you know, 20s, is spent winning Sulla's civil war for him. So,
yeah, you know. Kind of, yeah. I mean, so let's put it in some context. Yeah, so Marius and Sulla, two Roman generals, having a civil war. Marius is sort of a populist, if you like, and Sulla's sort of your arch optimate, what they call it, or is part of the aristocratic conservative senatorial faction party.
We will definitely do a life of Sulla at some point, because I absolutely love Sulla.
They quite often talk about them as parties, but they're not political parties. We know they're much more loose than that. So to be...
It's like familial alliances.
Yeah, and you can change aisles, so to speak. Yeah. It's very informal. You can, it's not really like a formal thing. But anyway, so his father, Pompeius Strabo, was bitterly hated. He was a general, apparently bitterly hated by his own men. But at the age of, so there's a civil war going on between Sulla and Marius. And at the age of 23, Pompey was not had, he's not been on the Cursus Honorum.
No. For anyone who doesn't know, the Cursus Honorum is the ladder that of offices, official offices, that young Roman aristocratic men would go through in order to be able to qualify for consulship.
But there's age qualifications.
Yes.
And property qualifications. You have to be a certain age before you're even eligible for certain things.
Which is a very wise way of governing your state.
Yeah.
And then you get someone like Pompey who comes along and says, well, yeah, but I'm really great.
Yeah, so at the age of 23, he raises, I think, 3 legions privately.
Yeah.
Okay, so right away, you can see we're in the late Republic.
Sure,
just wouldn't be able to do that a couple of hundred years earlier. There's no way that's really possible. But at 23, he raises 3 legions out of his own money. Mm. They're completely loyal to him. It's a private army, and he fights for Sulla, as you say.
Yeah. Sulla returns back from the east and finds Pompey with like 15,000 men. And it's like, oh, that's useful. I could definitely use 15,000 men and a bright young star of a general who they seem to like. And that's another thing as well. Pompey is a well-liked guy, you know, for a lot of his life. He's a generally popular man. And, you know, like his soldiers never turn on him. You know, he's always doing populist things as well, considering he's with the Optimates. He seems to be very concerned about popular opinion and, you know, how being well-liked himself. It's very much like a Trumpian figure in many ways, actually.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of same attitude where he wants the people to love him. And that's why he's got this fidelity to the Republic itself, because he thinks that if he can become the hero of the Republic, he's not going to become a dictator. He doesn't want to be a tyrant. He doesn't want to overthrow things. He just wants people cheering Pompey, Pompey, Pompey as he walks through the streets,
which
they did.
Yeah, on and off. Yeah. Thing is, though, you can argue that that's a bit of a weakness.
Yes, you can argue that this is a giant ego that he is carrying, around, that is indeed a weakness.
Or that he's a political non-entity. He'll do and say he's got no real convictions. He'll do and say anything that's in his interest.
Oh, yeah, but you can level that allegation against anyone.
Well, Caesar was a popularis consistently his entire career.
Yeah, but he began the civil war out of his own self-interest. Like, sorry, if anyone points to and say, Caesar, you're doing this out of self-interest, it's Julius Caesar. Right. Like, you know, Pompey can at least say, well, look, I'm defending the Republic. I'm doing this for other people. He can at least make that claim.
Yeah, as paper thin as it often was.
But Caesar can't even make the claim. He's like, yeah, well, I don't want to face all these charges that I'm going to face after coming back from Gaul and giving up my consulship. So, civil war. You know, I'm not going to get into it.
It's fair enough. Just where you change sides a lot.
Yeah, but everyone.
You know, a lot. Yeah.
Like Caesar sucked up to Marius, and Sulla and Pompey. Caesar was incredibly calculating. Like, so if we're pointing those fingers, again, like, you know. This applies to everyone.
I think that particularly Pompey, I mean, the ancient sources and modern historians say, yeah, but he did it more than anyone else. It's like the example of, and so nominally he was a Sullan, which is to say an Optimate, which is to say on the side of conservatism and the senatorial class. But he stabbed them in the back like three or four different times, politically, not yeah. not badly, never marched an army on Rome or anything.
Yeah, which puts him head and shoulders in patriotism above almost everyone else at the time. Marius, Sulla, possibly. Caesar, all of them marched armies on Rome. Pompey, good boy, didn't do nothing.
Well, there's the argument that the Senate itself is the problem, though, and the true patriot would have fought against them.
Julius Caesar would say that. That is exactly the Caesarian position. The man who overthrew the Republic, made the Senate a non-entity, and filled it with Gauls. Sorry, who's the real patriot here? Not Julius Caesar.
It's
my boy Pompey.
If you were a Caesarian partisan, you would see that you would argue that the senatorial class have done nothing but exploit the Roman for centuries. Oh. And that Caesar was returning power to the tribunes.
He
and
certainly
all sorts
wasn't
of different
exploiting
things.
Anyone, Julius, was he?
Well, no. yeah, you're right. It's fair enough.
All of these allegations are so hollow when they're coming from Caesar. Anyway, let's carry on Pompey's early life.
Right, yeah. So he fights the forces of Marius all over the place, in Africa, in Sicily.
Well, beginning in Africa, who's against? Sertorius or someone like that?
Well, yeah, so...
so he goes to Africa
there's
first.
A bit, there's it? A little bit later, these wars with Sertorius. So Sulla marches on Rome a couple of different times.
Yeah.
First time, it's relatively bloodless. He marches on Rome and he doesn't start killing people wholesale. He just says, look, there's a Sullan constitution, quite often gets mentioned. It's sort of a new settlement where he's sort of restating what the Republic should be in some sort of ways. Yeah. The Sullan constitution.
He's trying to restore the old Republic.
Right, in many ways, really conservative.
The line has been crossed.
Yeah. So Sulla does that, and then the Marius and his forces retake control a bit later, and Sulla has to march on Rome again.
Yeah.
And that's when there's lots of proscriptions for the first time.
Yeah.
That's where the horrors that could have been unleashed by the Gracchi, it really start to happen, for real. Under Sulla's second investment of Rome.
He's just putting to death his political opponents because they're a threat to the Republic. Did he do anything wrong?
Well, the extrajudicial killing, so yes, he did, yeah. He's acting as a tyrant.
yes, he is, but, you know, he's our tyrant. For anyone who doesn't know, the famous scene is Sulla lecturing to what remains of the Senate while a bunch of them are being murdered in, was it, the Temple of Jupiter or something. You can just hear the screams of them being executed. Sulla's like, right, you're all going to do as I say, aren't you? That's right. This is a restoration of the public, isn't it? Yeah, I thought so. You know, yeah, okay.
Yeah, some of the, I'll put a picture up, some of the pictures of Sulla are like quite scary. He's got like a terrifying countenance.
Oh,
like
it's... he's a great character.
but those prescriptions, at least for a window of time there, were so successful that Sulla himself could walk around Rome without a bodyguard.
And he retired.
No one would dare do anything to him.
Would you? You know?
No, I wouldn't. No.
Exactly. Of course not.
But later, you know, like...
He's a maniac.
Right. and so Pompey was one of his main captains, if you like. And after they sort of win, at least for the second time, I suppose, Pompey says, I want a triumph.
Mm.
And for people who don't know, a triumph is supposed to be ultra rare.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be super, super rare. By the end, Augustus gives himself three in one day stuff.
But there's an important aspect to triumphs. It has to have been saving the Republic from an imminent threat.
That's the idea. Yeah.
And usually that has to be foreign.
Yeah.
So if, you know, you get a triumph for defeating Hannibal, if you're Scipio, you don't get a triumph for crushing your countrymen and murdering them in the Temple of Jupiter as Sulla.
Mm.
You know, that's not where you get the triumph.
Mm.
And also you have to be, again, a certain age and you have to hold certain offices in order to qualify for these things. And like Pompey's like 25 or something at this point. And he's just like, so I've got this giant ego that I'm carrying around. I think I do deserve a triumph. And Sulla's like, no. And he's like, yeah, but people worship the rising sun and not the setting sun, don't they, old man? And Sulla's like, what?
Yeah.
And Pompey says it again to his face. And so Sulla's just like, the balls on this man. Give him a triumph then. Go on. And so he does give him a triumph. And you just think, Jesus Christ, Pompey. Just the brass balls on you. Yeah,
you can imagine Sulla being like, excuse me?
Yeah, exactly.
Baking powder?
Who are you?
Dare?
Who are you?
Just ask me that. Yeah, so he says, I want a triumph. Yeah. And they're like, you're not old enough to even be a general in the first place. You've illegally raised a private army straight away. You should at least be, before you're given any sort of army like that, you should have at least gone through loads of different bits on the ladder.
Yeah.
You've done none of that.
Yeah.
And
but all I can see is Pompey's sort of like smiling, boyish, grinning face. I'm like, yeah, so?
Yeah.
You shouldn't have marched on Rome, and what?
And he says to Sulla, yeah, I don't care, give me my triumph.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sulla's like, I like the cut of your jib, all right then. Well, because, well, there's the thing.
Well, there's a way, like, Sulla just seems like, just exasperated, just like, oh my god, I can't, okay, fine, give him his triumph then, you know, like, just whatever, you know, I've got a republic to restore, you know.
Yeah, but so here's a couple of things about Pompey right there. One, how can you possibly deny he's got an extraordinary character?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a force of will, skills, all sorts of things about his character, a bit like Napoleon. As he gets older, those things wane or become less pronounced, but certainly at the beginning, how could you kind of bully someone like Sulla into giving you something you're not legally allowed to have?
I can't imagine how anyone could bully Sulla. Because Sulla, like, he's kind of like an arch villain. Like, you know, Game of Thrones with Charles Dance's character, Lannister, Tywin Lannister. That's how he comes across. Like, Sulla is like the arch sort of patrician, you know, calculating strategic, has never lost a battle, you know, has marched on Rome, has conquered all of his enemies. And then you've got this young upstart, like beaming faced, like rosy cheeked boy who's like, yeah, so I want the tribe. Ha ha ha. And so it's like, okay, fine.
Mm.
You know, fine. It's just, this is not a threat to my power, but like, I can't believe you're back chatting me. You know, it's just mad.
Yeah. But the fact that, because it's completely against his will, all the accounts say Sulla didn't want to give him it, but he did.
Yeah.
So it's like, I wonder exactly what's going on there, the relationship between them, the power dynamic between them,
Pompey was very competent.
You can only really infer that, right?
Yeah.
Pompey says, also, I want your stepdaughter in marriage, thanks.
Yeah.
And so it's like, ah.
So okay. Bringing up marriage is an interesting thing, because Pompey has many different wives throughout his life.
I think he has five marriages.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, like, initially, like, when he's, like 19 or something, when he's very young, his father's died, and yet his father is being accused of having stolen something, and so Pompey is on trial for his father's crime, because that's how Roman law worked. And he managed to prove to the judge that it was actually one of his freedmen or something like this, a freed slave that had stolen this thing. So Pompey's acquitted. And the judge likes the cut of his jib so much, because Pompey, like, unlike his father, who's like, you know, ugly and cross-eyed, Pompey's a very handsome and hated as well. Pompey's a very handsome and charismatic man, and he's very well liked. He's, you know, just got this kind of natural charisma about him. And the judge likes him so much that not only does he acquit him, he offers his daughter in marriage. And then later on, he divorces the daughter to marry Sulla's niece or whatever it is.
Stepdaughter.
And then he ends up marrying Julius Caesar's niece. And, like, it's just wild how he just, like, just falls into these major, like, alliances through marriage. And it's just like, a lot of it's just like, look, you're just pushing your luck, aren't you? And he's like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm pushing my luck. Yeah. And it's like, what are you going to do? It's like, oh, I'm going to give you what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just a quick word on Roman marriages is that if we used to maybe, let's say, the medieval Christian idea of marriage is extremely strict.
Yeah.
Completely lawful and extremely strict.
Biblical.
And divorce is rare, if not non-existent. Whereas now you can get married and divorced with an Elvis impersonator in a drive-thru.
I mean, it's a lot like it was in Roman times.
Yeah, Roman marriage is a lot more. Divorce is not a problem. You can get married and divorced. Yeah. It's more like it's much more like a legal property contract kind of thing,
and
rather than just something that God has written in stone for all time.
And it's usually not very romantic. It's not very emotional. It's very much understood to be a property contract about wealth and familial ties and alliances, rather than, you know, anything, you know, romance or love or anything like this.
Certainly for rich and powerful people. For normal people, it'd be a different story.
But, for the aristocratic class. And it's just very remarkable how Pompey just goes through wives, frankly. I mean, it's really interesting as well. Like, divorce is just at the drop of a hat. Like, Caesar divorces his wife merely because there's a rumor that she had cheated on him.
Yeah.
And he's got this famous line. He's saying, no, Caesar's wife must be beyond reproach. And it's like, wow, that's a high standard. And he's just like, yep, you're gone.
Must be seen to be above reproach. Yeah. Like, yeah, even yeah. The smell.
Yeah,
of,
no one would even accuse. You know, that's what my wife has to be like.
Yeah.
That's, you know, very interesting. Because, I mean, obviously, like, Pompey divorces a couple of his wives because they're accused of cheating. And he's just like, yeah, yeah, well, you probably did. I'm gone. You know, I'll find another wife. Christ, I'm Pompey the Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so.
So one last quick general note is to say about how Pompey isn't the first person, the first young man to sort of get special commands, be allowed to raise a private army and then kind of extort a triumph out of the state. It's not the first person to do that. No. But he seems to be, and he doesn't create giant blocks of enemies. He is relatively charismatic with it, it seems. Because some people, when they act like this, they just immediately get a giant load of enemies.
He does have a winning personality, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, it seems to be so, yeah. I mean, you mentioned his face, it's called an honest countenance.
Yeah.
He's always described as having an honest countenance. And again, I'll put up a picture of a sort of a famous sculpture of him where he looks sort of benevolent, really. Yeah. He looks sort of friendly, even.
And there are
the
many...
opposite of Sulla's sculptures.
Oh, yeah. Sulla looks cruel. But there are many examples in his career where he demonstrates that actually he is quite forgiving and quite generous.
Right, yeah.
You know, he's cut from a different cloth to most of the Roman aristocrats, which is nice. Yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.